evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Happy International Women's Day to all our listeners in South Sudan. Here are some of the top stories we are looking at this Friday, March 8, 2024. The UN Secretary General warns that Sudan's conflict could spread to the rest of the region if not contained. And women in Cameroon march in protest for their rights. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of Cameroonian women were out on the streets Friday on this International Women's Day to press for more access to education, economic opportunity, and an end to harmful prejudices and practices. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Thousands of women listen to what is now referred to as the Women's Anthem, blasting through speakers on Yaoundé's May 20 Boulevard. The Central African State's Ministry of Women's Empowerment said about 30,000 women came out to mark this year's International Women's Day, most wearing special green and yellow gowns bearing the slogan, "Invest in Women, Accelerate Progress." The women sang about longing to be free and achieving true equality with men. Rights activist Moma B. Yvonne said women want to end the perception that they should be limited to raising children, domestic chores, and farm work.
Women just want a level playing ground. Women want equal opportunities. Women want that. The gender gap that has been delaying for so long be bridged. If you have a female and a male child, give them the same opportunities. Level the playing ground.
Moma said illiteracy among women remains high because many families still prefer to only send boys to school. Protesters said that preference blocks women from positions in public offices where literacy is a requirement. They also complained that men own more than 85% of Cameroon's land and will only sell it to other men or only hand it over to their sons. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua, Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment, says President Paul Biya is committed to improving the conditions of women. She says the appointment of more women as managers of state corporations and directors of administrative offices shows there is a political will to end prejudices and involve women in decision-making.
Many of them do not know their rights. If they want to progress, they must have the will. And I think the government is doing a lot to allow women to really emerge. Women have proven that they can be in all domains, but we still need to do more to see that all those who enter primary education, they are not dropped out.
Ondua noted that Cameroon currently has over 60 women in the country's 180-member National Assembly, the lower house of parliament, and about 50 women who are mayors in towns and cities. Moki Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Yaoundé, we go to Juba, where some activists say International Women's Day reminds women in South Sudan to continue with the struggle for inclusion in political and economic spaces. Juliana Shepai has that story from Juba, but we'll bring you the tape after we go to Sudan. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told Security Council Thursday that the conflict in Sudan has inflicted severe harm on its people, posing threat to the country's unity. He warned of a significant risk that the conflict could trigger widespread regional instability spanning from the Sahel to the Horn of Africa and the Red Sea. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
The United Nations chief expressed grave concern about the conflict in Sudan expanding into a fully blown civil war that could destroy the East African country if not quickly contained.
We are deeply alarmed by calls for arming civilians and popular mobilization activities in various states. Armed groups are entering the fray in Darfur and South Kordofan. All these dangerous developments are pouring fuel on the fire for an even more serious fragmentation of the country, a deepening of intra- and intercommunal tensions, and more ethnic violence. It is time to silence the guns and raise the volume for peace.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres reminded the Council of the humanitarian disaster resulting from the 11-month-long conflict.
The humanitarian crisis in Sudan is reaching colossal proportions. Fully half the population, some 25 million people, need life-saving assistance. Over 14,000 people have been killed, although that number is likely far higher. Sudan is now home to the world's largest international displacement crisis, with 6.3 million people seeking safety within the country since the beginning of the conflict, and another 1.7 million people have fled to neighboring countries.
Guterres also addressed the hunger crisis emerging from the Sudan conflict, which aid organizations such as the World Food Programme say is spreading to South Sudan and Chad.
Some 18 million people are acutely food insecure. This is the highest number ever recorded during a harvest season, yet numbers are expected to surge even higher in the coming months. We are already receiving reports of children dying from malnutrition. The United Nations and our humanitarian partners are doing everything we can to stem this suffering. But we are facing major challenges as we try to reach millions of people in need.
The UN boss also appealed to Sudan's warring parties, the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces, to observe a ceasefire during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which is expected to begin Sunday evening. During the same Security Council session Thursday, Al-Haris Idris Al-Haris Mohammed, Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, said armed groups and elements from the region have been drawn into the conflict.
Sudan is dealing with war, which is supported by a number of states by fighters and mercenaries who have been brought from various continents, including some neighboring states. This is exerting highly unusual pressure on the Sudanese national security to review our crossing points with Chad and Darfur, the possibility of finding an alternative opening and other crossings and roads in addition to Port Sudan and South Sudan.
Sudan's military-run government agreed this week to let aid in from neighboring South Sudan and Chad. Aid organizations had criticized the government based in Port Sudan for blocking their access to RSF-controlled areas in Darfur from Chad. Aid agencies say hundreds of thousands of displaced people in Darfur need urgent assistance. Sudan's government said it will now specify certain border crossings and routes into the country from Chad and South Sudan for aid operations. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, the French news agency AFP reports that Mohamed Fattah al-Burhan Rahmani, son of Sudan's military chief and de facto leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has been seriously injured in a road accident in Turkey. Reports from the DHA news agency state that he collided with a utility vehicle while riding his motorbike in Ankara, throwing him several meters away from his bike. Rahmani has been admitted to intensive care following the incident. The Sudanese embassy in Ankara has yet to comment on the matter. The incident comes amidst ongoing tension between Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his former deputy Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, which began after a joint military coup in 2021. The conflict has resulted in tens of thousands of casualties and has severely impacted on Sudan's economy and infrastructure, forcing over 8 million people from their homes. Some South Sudanese women marking International Women's Day in Malakal say they have seen little improvement in the protection of their rights. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Court reports from Malakal.
Women gathered in Upper Nile State Capital Friday to mark International Women's Day. One of the issues they are protesting was domestic violence. 50-year-old Nyangeet Arop, a mother of 9 children, says it was not common in South Sudan many years ago. Nyangeet says that has changed and she urges married men and women to talk to each other to address gender-based violence.
A woman cannot be beaten if she is speaking well with her husband. If you are polite, your husband will not beat you because he is your husband. Is he not the one who married you? For us, we cannot be beaten. But only the young ladies are beaten because you are a generation that compete with words. This is why there is domestic violence. If there is no money from the husband, the wife says you ate the money or you went with another woman.
18-year-old Ayak Peter is a Form 4 student in Malakal town and a mother of 2-year-old child. She says her parents sent her brother to school and she was told to wait because she is female. Ayak says her right to education was abused and she never gave up. She says after enrolling in school later, she realized that a woman can do what men do in Malakal. She says women should not be treated as subordinate, but partners who can achieve many things when given an opportunity.
International Women's Day, it has given us great empowerment, whereby we know that we have been honored in our life, us, the women of South Sudan. We don't want to remain as a woman doing our choices, so we want to do what a man is doing to complete the power, because when a man is working alone, it is our power. And when it is combined with a woman, it is a full power now. This also gives her the equality with the men.
30-year-old Christine Dennis, a mother of 4, says unemployment poses a great risk to some women in Upper Nile State who depend on their husbands. Christine says total dependency on a man's income is one of the causes of gender-based violence in South Sudan.
Nowadays, when a woman asks the husband for support, he will say, "What is it for?" We are calling for women to be granted the chance to work so that we can cater for our needs.
She says South Sudan's economic crisis could fuel domestic violence as parents struggle to feed their families.
When a woman approaches a man, he will respond rudely, and this will lead to fighting. He will not say he does not have the money in an understanding way.
48-year-old Elizabeth Nyaluk, who has 8 children, says despite problems, some women in Upper Nile State think a lot has changed for them.
We are happy on International Women's Day because it is a day of our freedom. We appreciate the government and the UN for giving us freedom. Before, it was like we were in prison, but now our eyes are open. Even if you stay in the house, we still enjoy your freedom and the happiness that women are in leadership.
Garwech Red, the Deputy Director for Gender at Upper Nile Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says the role women played during South Sudan's struggle for independence cannot be ignored.
Ministry of Gender need to bring equality and empower women. Now we continue to train the parliament chief or the community leader, also the government official.
Red says the ministry has received some abuse reports, adding that there are significant changes in Malakal County, but some counties in remote parts of the state would still be facing serious violations of women's rights. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart in Malakal.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We'll bring you more pieces on this International Women's Day. Stay tuned for those stories after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Happy International Women's Day. Some activists say this International Women's Day reminds women in South Sudan to continue to struggle for inclusion in political and economic spaces. Juliana Shiapai has more from Juba.
This year's theme for International Women's Day is Invest in Women, Accelerate Progress, and Inspire Inclusion. But some women leaders say it's difficult to achieve the goal in South Sudan. Jacqueline Nasiwa, an executive director of the Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice, says women's inclusion in South Sudan affairs remains a tall order.
We have found that women have not even reached the 35%. It's ranging between 26 and 31 at the executive, at the national level, and the parliament. And then at the state level, it's around 13%, which is very sad. So that means that efforts have to be done to accelerate the inclusion of women and for women to be represented beyond the 35%. And this calls for policy reforms today, and it also calls for legal framework that could ensure that the affirmative action quota for women is respected, and that women are participating fully in the transition and also in the peace-building processes.
Viola Riak is a gender and human rights activist. She says women in South Sudan have a significant role to play in the country's affair, adding that they are the backbone of the society.
So on this International Women's Day, it's basically to celebrate our role as women in social, economic, and cultural and political spaces, and to remind all the stakeholders that women empowerment should be at the heart in everything. That what does empowerment mean? It means that we have to give women space to exercise their political and economic rights. We have to give them the rights to finish their education so that they can fulfill their aspiration. And we also have to give them space and the rights to choose their life partners without being coerced or without being subjected to a person that they don't feel comfortable with.
Some South Sudanese women leaders were at the forefront in the search for peace in the country. Merica J. Lona, a human rights activist at the South Sudan Democratic Engagement Monitoring and Observation Program, was at the negotiation table with men after South Sudan's 2013 conflict. She says International Women's Day reminds her of the achievements of South Sudan women in peace building.
International Women's Day for me is a day of reflection, and it's a day of taking account of what we've done as women, the achievements we have had as women for the last 1 year. What have we done? And that starts right from an individual level to women at national level, but also globally. What have women achieved? That to me is International Women's Day.
Gender-based violence is still a problem across South Sudan. Several rights groups, including the UN's Human Rights Commission, continue to publish reports of serious human rights abuses across the country. Rhea William Uyuda is the executive director of Crown the Women, a Juba nonprofit working with women who experiences gender-based violence. She says accountability and inclusivity could make South Sudan a better place for its people.
So for me, this International Women's Day is, I call out on everyone, on all of us, to include everyone, to give equal opportunities and access to all women, the young girls, the older women, the working class women, the women who stay at home.
Nasiwa, Viola, Lona, and Rhea says women empowerment is crucial during the country's economic crisis, and the soaring inflation. South Sudan will officially mark this year's International Women's Day at the end of March in Mudri East County of Western Equatoria State. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
From Juba, we move to the rest of the continent. At least 19 African nations must still vote in elections this year, at a time when some political analysts say many leaders and political parties are undermining democracy. They say politicians and military juntas continue to undercut democratic rights across Africa. Darian Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Algeria, Chad, Ghana, Senegal, South Africa, and Togo are just a few of the nations expected to elect new leaders in the coming months. Frederick Kempe, president of the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C., characterizes it as a time of hope and peril.
This also comes at a time when innovative technologies like artificial intelligence can be forces for progress and forces for democracy, but they can even be used as effective tools for surveillance and control by autocrats. Over the past 4 years, Africa has seen coups and military transitions across Gabon, Niger, Burkina Faso, Chad, Guinea, Mali, and Sudan. These events have resulted variously from flawed elections, attempts to change constitutional term limits, the inability of civilian governments to effectively address security and development challenges.
Kempe was speaking during a recent webinar hosted by the Council, a foreign policy research institute. Well-known African democracy activist Mo Ibrahim told the audience he's not optimistic.
The question in front of us is the state of democracy in Africa, and I can answer that in a very short sentence. It is bad and deteriorating. We have seen continuous deterioration of freedoms and rights of citizens, and this has been deteriorating for the last 5 years or so, unfortunately.
Ibrahim says it'll sound fantastic to say 20 African countries voted in 2024, but the reality is darker.
Only 7 have term limits. The rest either never had term limits or modified or changed term limits to enable incumbents to continue in office. Some 500 million people of Africa, that's 1/3 of our population, don't have proof of identity. So they cannot register, they cannot vote.
Ibrahim says almost all African elections are plagued by logistical problems, such as insufficient ballots and polling stations.
An example of what happened in latest election in DRC, 27 of the polling stations did not even open. Of those who opened, 45% of the voting machines malfunctioned.
Research from Ibrahim's foundation shows a big part of what should be Africa's major voting bloc, young adults, won't vote in the coming elections.
They don't vote in large numbers because they lost faith in the process. They don't lose faith in the democracy. Democracy is popular. If you ask people in Africa which system of governance you like, they will say democracy. But they don't recognize their own system as a democratic system because of abuse of power and misrule. Many of them, unfortunately, decide just to ignore elections and the process, and we lose that.
Tessa Dooms is a South African political activist. As director of the Rivonia Circle, a Johannesburg-based pro-democracy group, she crosses the continent asking young people about elections.
Many young people that we speak to at the Rivonia Circle are talking about feeling like their vote doesn't matter, feeling like that voting doesn't change things, having watched their parents and their grandparents vote over the years and have not seen the dividends of democracy and are questioning whether or not their vote will matter. Others are struggling to find who to vote for and are looking at...
Dooms says young Africans are completely disconnected from the elderly politicians who run most countries on the continent, while most abhor the big men with guns who rule by fear. They, like many older people, Dooms says, won't vote because they feel the candidates that are running don't care about their interests. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we come back to Washington, where President Joe Biden used his third State of Union address Thursday evening to announce dramatic measures to facilitate aid to Gaza, push funding for Ukraine's war efforts, and to warn the country of the threat posed by Donald Trump, his likely opponent in the November elections. VOA's White House bureau chief, Patsy Widakwasara, has this wrap-up of what may be the most consequential speech ahead of the president's elections, re-election bid.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Like many American presidents in the last year of their first term, President Joe Biden delivered his State of the Union address with a key goal in mind, to convince the American people he deserves 4 more years.
Tonight, we can proudly say, the state of our union is strong and getting stronger.
He addressed voters' concerns about his age and mental acuity, turning it into an attack against former President Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee he's likely to face in the November election.
The issue facing our nation isn't how old we are. It's how old our ideas. hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas.
While it's not technically a campaign speech, Biden had a clear message to voters. Trump is a dire threat to democracy. The president invoked the January 6, 2021 storming of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters seeking to overturn Biden's victory in the 2020 election.
My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that.
As Israel's military campaign raged in Gaza, Biden announced a dramatic measure to deliver much-needed aid for Palestinians.
Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground.
It's unclear whether the plan will be enough to appease progressive Democrats, Arab and Muslim Americans outraged by Biden's unyielding support of Israel. Hundreds protested outside while he spoke. Biden underscored Israel's right to self-defense against Hamas while calling for a temporary ceasefire and the release of hostages held by the militant group. And in a rare rebuke to Israel, he expressed frustration over the lack of aid and the 30,000 death toll in Gaza.
To the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority. As we look to the future, the only real solution to the situation is a two-state solution over time.
Biden's foreign policy goals have been overshadowed by House Republicans' obstruction of a Senate-approved $95 billion foreign aid package to help Ukraine in its fight against Russia. Biden urged them to pass the bill.
My message to President Putin, who I've known for a long time, is simple. We will not walk away.
Biden urged Congress to pass a bill on immigration and border security, a key issue for American voters. He laid the blame for the deadlock on Republicans and Trump, accusing them of exploiting the border as a political issue.
We can fight about fixing the border, or we can fix it. I'm ready to fix it.
He vowed to protect the right to abortion and in vitro fertility treatment, a top concern for Democrats amid conservative states restricting access.
Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away?
Biden also touted his policies, calling the American economy the envy of the world. He laid out a progressive economic agenda targeting corporate America and the wealthy.
No billionaire should pay a lower federal tax rate than a teacher, a sanitation worker, or a nurse.
Alabama Senator Katie Britt delivered the Republican response.
President Biden just doesn't get it. He's out of touch. Under his administration, families are worse off. Our communities are less safe, and our country is less secure.
The data shows the economy has exceeded expectations, but inflation remains a major concern of voters, creating a potential weakness for Biden ahead of the election. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
We prepared for you on this Friday, March 8, 2024. We now leave you with Fally Ipupa and the song Seyo Seyo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Hindley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Zalaki epuve kasina motema teo kuna badoli la papanga na motema dance love salite suki na nzoto kasina motema te kuna ndesika na loja dance love forteresse sécurisée infranchissable attaque homme le conquérant lingaki pour franchir te poboli na yo dance love fortification na mboka ya motema na ngaye mama motema lokola baselile mère ekose divise pe kose multiplie yango moto akoki kobomba ne 3-4 amour kasi yanga motema indivisible place mokose ya dance love mon amour.